Okay, so I start again. I will talk first about communication protocol, but it's really quickly because there is a lot of communication protocol and I don't want to go into detail. The main thing is just to tell you that there is several kind of communication protocol. So you have the classical communication protocol like TCP, UDP, even HTTP. The problem with this protocol is that you have to implement everything by your own because they are not used to just enable you to send message, but then the format of the message and everything you have to implement all by your own. That's why some people try to propose some other protocols that help you to deal with distributed objects. You have some multicast also oriented protocol that the goal here was just to do multicast and don't have to send a message to using unicast because usually you probably know that on the internet you can do unicast broadcast but multicast is not really well supported. So the goal of this protocol was to enable you to also achieve multicast transmission. So they use some additional network layer to enable you to do some multicast. Also not go into detail. There is some protocols that are dedicated to virtual reality. So for example, you have RTP that enable to deal with interaction. You have also vRTP, which is a kind of support for VRML. So you maybe not know VRML, but VRML is a virtual reality modeling language. So it's just a language to model some 3D shape or thing like that. And vRTP is a kind of HTTP for, so HTTP is to send at the beginning HTML. And so vRTP is the same for VRML. So it's the HTTP of VRML. And some other language dedicated. So basically what this language did, they enable you to, they have also predefined format for objects. So they enable you to send object parameters and also to deal with synchronization. We will see later that we can put timestamp on the message to try to retrieve the order of the messages, and so this language helps you to do that. On the protocol, we have also some protocols that are specific to industrial environments. So usually when you want to do some remote collaboration between industrial companies, you have a lot of problems because of they have just simple access internet, but they also have a firewall and some security policy that not enable you to do what you want. So there is some protocols that help to deal with HTTP, HTTPS protocol, and do only this communication through HTTP and HTTPS in order to don't get blocked by the firewall. For that, for example, is the long pooling technique. That the idea is to because you know that with HTTP you are just enabled to send a request and wait for the answer. So you cannot send a message just like that. So if you want to send message, you can send message, but you cannot get something back asking for to get something back. So you can. You always have to send message first, so that's what this long pooling technique. And the idea was to always send a message and asking for a new thing. So it's a bit complicated, but it's I think one of the best way to overcome HTTP and HTTPS connection. And I think Michel will talk to you about Node.js, which also another way to do a web connection like that and with a kind of lightweight connection using a web protocol. And there is also more and more generic standards that start to be used. So you, I don't know, you maybe not have heard about VRTP, but it's something that is more and more used to deal with all the peripheral, the virtual reality interaction device. So VRTP is for virtual reality peripheral network. So it's used a lot on, it's mainly, I think, on local network, but to deal with a tracking system and things like that. A lot of also interaction system use OSC. So OSC is open sound control. So at the beginning, it was something used to send sound messages, but now it's more and more used to transmit information, even about interaction and things like that. So this one is pretty well a lot used now. And yeah, of course, there is also some new stuff arriving with HTML5. So especially even for 3D, because we have a WebGL, which is you can embed some 3D application in HTML5 now. So yeah, HTML5 is also one way to do that. So, and I will not talk more about communication protocol. You can ask more if you want more detail, and you can also have a look on internet. There is a lot of stuff for that. For your project, I think you can. You have two solutions. Either I think Michel will tell you a lot about, not maybe a lot, but we tell you about Node.js. So it's probably one good solution to do that. You can also implement your own communication protocol through TCP or UDP. If it's something really simple, you can probably do it by your own. And you can also, I think, have a look on OSC. It's also one good way to do the communication between node. So now I will talk about consistency management mechanism. So the goal of this mechanism is to deal with inconsistencies. These inconsistencies can be due to network delay or concurrent modification. We have saw that here. So we have two kinds of techniques here. We have the synchronization. So we see that, for example, in replicated data distribution mode, each computer executes its own version of the virtual world. So we need to have some synchronization between all these computers. And we have also concurrency control mechanisms. So we'll talk about these two techniques. So the synchronization, the goal is to ensure that each user has the same state of the virtual environment at the same time, especially if they are the own version of the virtual environment. If we are in a centralized data distribution, it's maybe not useful because the server ensures already that. But as soon as we have replicated the data, we need to ensure this synchronization. So time is a fundamental element of collaborative virtual environment, and we can have also two kinds of time, which sounds a bit weird, but we can have some absolute time, so it's using real time, so it's we need to use synchronized clock, like for example, you can use UTC clock, and have some clock synchronized between all the computer, and we can directly use this time, so it's what we call absolute time. And another kind of time is the logical or virtual time. Instead of being something like really the time, it's just some numbers, in fact, what we call logical clock. It's just we use timestamp to get back the order sequence of event. So it's just we have the first message, the second, the third, and so on. And we don't have the exact time of these messages, but we still have the order of all these messages. So it's what's called logical and virtual time. And for example, if your project, if you need to do some synchronization, it might be probably really easy to use some virtual time or logical times and to have absolute time and compute the time for each message. But just maybe saying this one is the first message, second, third, and so on is probably a really more simple way to do that. So then we have different kind of synchronization. So I will present a few of them. Maybe I will go quickly at the end because there is a lot. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. So, but the first one is one, I think it's one of the most used. It's called lockstep synchronization. So the idea is to wait that all the node compute the next stimulation step before. So we have some simulation step, and we just check that all the nodes compute the same simulation step at the same time. So we each node send an acknowledgement when you have to the system when you have finished to compute the simulation step, and then the system allow all the nodes to process the next step and wait that everybody has compute this next step, and so on. So the advantages is that in this way we have a perfect synchronization, and of course then even are processed in the correct order because they are just processed one by one. The drawbacks is that real time is not guaranteed, because if you have to wait for all the computer, maybe one will slow down everybody. It's also another drawback. Just one computer can slow down all the other, so which can be a bit bad. So some people have proposed some solution using several groups for log-stack synchronization. So for example, the pretty fast computer are in the same group, so this computer are well synchronized together. But if some other are too slow to be in this group and will slow down this computer, we move it to another group of computer, and we can have like that several group. And even for really slow computer, we can move them to a group with no synchronization. You know, sometimes we have to make choice, and if some computer breaks all the simulation, we have to move them down. So that's why here, and the computer can also move from one group to another. So if one is really fast in this group and always have to wait for the other, maybe we can move it back to the fastest synchronization group and this kind of thing. So it's one way to deal with synchronization. Another one is impose a global consistency. So here, the idea is to delay the processing of local and remote event. So the idea is even if we have a local event that arrives quickly and we need to wait for a remote event, we delay the processing of local event in order to wait that we receive the remote event. And for that, we have to use a predefined value, which is always the network latency. So we wait for the network latency and we process all the event at the same time. And for that, we can use an absolute clock. We have to use an absolute clock, so it's the absolute time. So if we say we have to wait 100 milliseconds for all the remote event, we wait this 100 milliseconds and then we compute the local and the remote event, and we can then process it in the correct order, because when we do the processing, we have all the event. So the advantage is we have a strong synchronization. But of course, it introduces latency for interaction, because we always have to wait this delay. Another way, which is a bit similar, it's the delay global consistency. So the previous one was imposed. So we impose the consistency. This one, we delay a bit the consistency. So the idea is to mark event with a logical clock. So it's what I was saying. We have the first event, second event, third event. And we execute the event following the order, the correct order of the timestamp we receive. So for example, if we have in local 1 and 2, and we really... No, it's not a good example. Well, 1 and 3, and we have 1, 2, and 5, which are local event, and we need to receive, for example, 3 and 4 from the network. Then we will do 1, we will do 2, and then before doing 5, we will wait for 3, and we will wait for 4 that come from the network. And in this way, causality is unsure, so we are sure that the event are executed in the correct order. But of course, we don't have any time synchronization, because if we have to wait from the network, for three and four, it can delay, and we don't have this synchronization. I will change a bit the order. I will talk now about this one, which is time wrap synchronization. So the idea is a bit similar to the one I presented before. So events are also marked with timestamps, but they are processed as soon as they arrive. And so I take again my example. I have 1, 2, and 5, which is a local event, and I have 3, 4 that are coming from the network. So I can, in this case of time warp synchronization, I will process 1, 2, and if I didn't receive 3 and 4, then I will process 5. And then when I receive 3 and 4, I would say, oh, wait, I did a mistake. Then I will delay the action of 5, process 3 and 4, and run again 5, which is another way to do. So it's what we call rollbacks are used to solve a causality error. So when we receive older messages, we undo what we have done, execute the new messages, and redo the last messages. So if incoming event older than the event already processed, we do a rollback. So the advantage is that in this case, there is no latency because we execute the message as soon as they arrive. But the drawback is that we have to do rollbacks, so which is really annoying for users. So in case of rollback, we have to also explain to the user what's happened. So we have to give him a feedback that we are doing a rollback. And something also really annoying is the rollback propagation, because when we have executed, for example, 5, maybe the other will have started to do something else by using the action done in 5. So if we undo 5, we have also to undo what the user has done with 5. So it's it can be like that. I think I will continue on this one, and I will come back to the other one. So another way is also to predict. It's called synchronization. It's called predictive time management. So the idea is to predict even before they occur and send them on the network. So it sounds a bit weird, but yeah, we'll see that it's only for some particular object. So the idea is to prevent, to predict the event before they occur and send them on the network to tell to the other which will be the next state of one particular object. And for that, we want to send them just in time to avoid the bad prediction, because if we send it really too much in advance, of course, we can do some bad prediction. So we send them just in time, and for that, I think it was in a system, they use RTT, which was round trip time, I think, or something like that. But the idea was just to estimate the network latency. So we estimate the time required to send the message, and we send this message just in advance of this particular time. And in this way, we can ensure a good synchronization, but the drawback, it's only for some, the object has to have a predictable behavior. So, for example, in some animation case, if we are just doing an interpolation, we can predict what would be the next step. For collision detection, we can also detect the collision a bit in advance. So this is this kind of object where we can use this kind of synchronization. And I think I just keep this one, which is quite simple and can be used in a lot of cases, and maybe you will use this one. It's a server synchronization. So you have just a server that manages a state number for each object. So on the server, you have you increment a state number for each object, so at each modification. And when you have a, so the server sends the last receive update to the node if they are not up to date. So if the server have version 5 and one of the client have just version 3, then the server will send him version 5. It works like that. So the advantage that it ensures that all nodes are up to date, it reduces the number of send messages. But yeah, no causality and no time synchronization. Yeah, the thing, it can depend also on the implementation, but usually if the server has the number 5 and if a computer has just the number 3, he will send him directly number 5 and he will not send him number 4. So he just sends the last state of the object. So if in some case it can be okay, but for example, if it's the position of the object, if the position go from this position to this position to this position, I just send the last position, it's okay. But in some other case, it can be problematic. So if some other action depend of the state 4, I call about 3, 4, and 5, and if I don't send 4, and some other action depend on four, it can be a problem. But it's again always a trade-off. So now I will talk quickly about concurrency control. So the idea, I say that in a centralized mode and in a hybrid mode, if we have just, in fact, one referent, it's not a problem. So the server or the referent can handle concurrent modification only by itself, just by dealing with the different modification request it received. So then there is several ways to deal with this modification request, but because it's on one computer, it can deal, it can maybe combine the two modifications, give a priority to one modification, or several different things. But because it's only on one computer, it's possible to do it. When we are in a replicated mode or a hybrid mode, so which means that we have several referents for the same object, a virtual object can be modified locally on several nodes at the same time. And then the concurrency, we detect this concurrent modification only when we receive the update message. So the concurrency has to be controlled in advance. So for that, there is three modes of concurrency control. So it's, I think, three categories, not really three modes. So the pessimistic mode. So only one user can modify an object at the same time. So before modifying an object, you can ask first, I want to modify this object. So and the server or the one who it depends, or you just if it's a replicated data distribution, you just tell to all the other, I want to modify this object, and you tell, so then you are not allowed to modify it. So only one user can modify an object at the same time. So that's also something good and something bad. So you have the optimistic mode. So no concurrency control during the interaction. So everybody can modify an object, but then you have to do some correction is necessary when conflict occurs. So if we are two users modify the same object, you send the update message, you detect the modification. You will have to send some other message to say, oh no, but another user modifies the object before you, then you cannot do this modification. So this, if there is not too much conflict, it's okay, but if there is a lot of conflict, it can be a bit annoying for that. It happens sometimes, for example, in Google Doc, when you type stuff, and sometimes it's typing stuff at the same time as you, and then what you have done is delayed and replaced by what the other did, so that's... If it's just, it happened just a few times, it's okay, but if it's happened all the time, it's a problem. So that's why this mode, it depends also on the application. And the last one is a prediction-based mode, so it predicts which user will probably modify an object and give the priority to the user according to this prediction. So if, for example, you have an object in a virtual world, you have some user around, you will maybe give the priority to the one who is the closest one to the object because you predict that this one will modify the object first and maybe not the one who are a bit far away. And yeah, of course, if the other and if it's the two are modifying the object at the same time at the end, but then you give the priority to one who is the closest because it's the more supposed to modify the object. So yeah, I think this is the three main mode of concurrency control. Also, one last thing about concurrency control, you can also deal with access right also. You force the object, you may give different access right to user. So the idea is to protect a virtual object. So in some, physical simulation, sometimes it's some confidential data. So you don't want that everybody can see it. You want also that maybe you have non-modifiable object, and you can also assign a role to some user. So some user will just have the right to see the object, some other will just can see and modify the object, and something like that. So usually there is three criteria, but yeah, it's true for virtual reality, but I think it's true for most of the of the interactive system, so you have the right to see the object, you have the right to modify its parameter, and you have the right to create and delete object. So yeah, there's usually this three level object, and it depends. But one solution can be to use a scale of access level from 0 to n access level. And I think a good practice is to put 0 is the most restrictive. So 0 is the most restrictive. And then it's a bit contradictory, because what we want to do, because usually we say 1 is not really restricted, and 2, 3, and as soon as we increase the number, it's more restricted. But the bad thing is, if you put 5, like the most restrictive, then you cannot add more level. Because but if you do it in the other way, it's the better, because 0 is the most restrictive, and if you want to add more level, you can add as much as you want. So yeah, and the last thing is, I tell here, it's the right to modify its parameter, but we can also imagine put a specific access right for specific parameter. It depends again on the application, but if, for example, we can give a specific access right for the position, a specific access right for the color, and so on. Because in this case, some user may be able to change the color, but not the position, and things like that. Okay, so now I switch to communication reduction mechanism. So the goal is to avoid to overload the network. So if we have a big number of users, we don't want to overload the network. If also we have a low bandwidth network, we want to try to reduce the number of messages transmitted on the network. But of course, we want to do it without reducing the consistency of the virtual environment and increasing the latency during interaction. So I will just give you some example of this communication reduction mechanism. A very famous one, you may already have heard of him, is what we call dead reckoning. So the idea is to predict, it's based on three things. So we have a prediction method, which is composed of a prediction formula, an error threshold, and a convergence formula. So I will show you just after that an example. But the idea is on each node is in charge of the object computation. So we compute the behavior of the object by using the prediction formula. So it says this object should go in this direction, for example. It does not send any update messages to all the others. So everybody is computing the for example, the trajectory of an object using the prediction formula. And just one is in charge of computing the exact behavior of the object. And this object, we compute the exact behavior of the object, also compute the prediction. And if there is an error threshold between the exact behavior and the prediction, so it means that there is a bad prediction, or because of the bad prediction, because a user did an action, then the node will send an update message to correct the prediction, in fact. And the correct set of the object is recovered using a convergence formula. So here you have an example. So you have an object here, which is moving in this direction. But here, for example, a user asks the user to turn right. But on the other node, we cannot know that. So it was the object was continuing. But when here we reach the error threshold, we say, oh no, the object has turned on right, so it's not going the good direction. So then here the convergence formula is used to bring back the object on the good trajectory. And it can look something like that a bit. So here it's of course a bit exaggerating, because the threshold can be really slow, really low. And as soon as it's a bit far from the normal trajectory, it's come back.
So you mean that the object will do like something like that?
Yeah, here, because it's a bit exaggerating, but
in the real life, in the real simulation, the object will do that. So if we exaggerate.
Yeah, if we exaggerate a bit. So in the one who is doing the modification, it will. If I'm on the. This one is a Sander pass, so it's the one who is doing the modification on the object. He will see the correct thing, but on the other node, he will see a bit the bad prediction happen and coming back. Yes, but of course it depends of how the threshold is big or small, and how the convergence formula also bring back the he can bring back it smoothly to the good trajectory or thing like that. So it's really depend on the parameter, of course. But yeah, the idea is that of course, you have a slightly different trajectory on the receiver side. OK, so to reduce the number of messages, one solution is also to filter the message. So you send only the update to the concerned user. So the idea is, if I have 1,000 of users, maybe I don't want to send update messages to all these users, even if they don't have the object for which I'm sending this update modification. So the idea is to avoid to overloading the network, of course, because you send less messages, but also to reduce the processing time of the message. Because if you receive you have a lot of objects in your virtual world and you receive a lot of messages for all these objects, you will spend a lot of time processing this message, even if you are not concerned by this message. So just reduce the number of share objects between users. This object, the filter ring can be done according to the area of interest of the user. So one simple thing is if we want to send only the object close to a user. We can send only the objects that are close to this user, or only the object in his field of view, and we don't send the update for all the other all the objects that are not in the field of view of the user. For that, it would be good to have a server that knows which user own which object, because then he can decide if they have to send him the message or not. And if we can use also multicast communication, it's better, because we just have to send one message that would be received only by the concerned user. I think I talked already about migration. So the idea is just to move the reference from one node to another. So the idea, we can balance the processing load. And also, we saw that we can move the reference on the node of the user we interact. I think I talked already about that. And the last thing is compression and aggregation. So the compression, the idea is to just compress the data. I think you know already a lot about that. So it's usually not really relevant for position, orientation, or really simple parameter like that, because if we just have three values, it doesn't make sense to compress them. But it can be useful and when we start to have really complicated data. So for example, when we have an avatar, we need to send the position of each joint. So for example, for the arm, we have the shoulder joint, the hand joint, and all the thing, and we need to send a lot of values. So it starts to be interesting to compress the data. And also in the case of physical simulation, you have also a lot of data to send. So it's interesting to compress this data. When you want to migrate a particular object, so you have to send all the parameters of this object, or even maybe this geometry, so you have to do this migration, so it might be interesting to compress the data. And also when you want to load new virtual objects, so I say sometimes you don't have the full virtual world, you just have the objects that are necessary for you, but when you move somewhere else, you may want to have to download some new virtual objects or with their geometry and things like that. So maybe it would be interesting to compress the data in this case. One last thing, which is aggregation. So the idea is to send all the updates of all the object updates in one message. Instead of sending the message for all the objects one by one, you just do a big message with all the update of all the objects. And you just send one message, which is really better for the network. The problem is that it can increase delay in message in the message or transmission, because the message is bigger, but also in the message, I think it's the more thing which is more important, can introduce delay in the message processing, because you receive a big message and you have to separate all the modification to all the objects, so it can take more time to process this big message.
And what if you just send the parameters going to modify?
Yeah, it's also a solution.
Instead of sending the warm file, you're just sending rid of the
parameters already. Yeah, I didn't go into detail of that, but of course when you send the update messages, you have two solutions. You can send the full object state, so you send all the parameters of the object, and you can send also only the parameter that has been modified. And actually, it's usually what we do. We just send only the parameter that has been modified in order to also reduce the size of the message. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay, so that's it for communication reduction mechanism. Now I will just, I think I still have some time to talk a bit about software architecture. So the idea of software architecture is that we will have this here, which would be our virtual object, or in the case of your project, your shared object between several computers. And you will have all this data going on the network, so the data can be remote data on another computer, can be local data. And this data, for example, for the position, is just numbers. And then you will have to show this data to the user, and you will have to use, I don't know, in the case of the virtual object, you will have to use a 3D graphic library to show the object to the user. You will have an audio library to give a sound to the object. You will have also some interaction device that will enable you to do some action on the object. You can also have physical objects. So the idea is we have, on one side, we have all this data, and we saw how to deal with this data, to distribute them on the network. And on the other side, you will have the what we call representation to the user, so how we represent all this data to the user. And usually this thing depends on some different libraries. So the idea is how to design a virtual object or even interactive object in order to ensure a good separation between data distribution and multiple representation. Because we don't want that we put some code about the data distribution in the graphical library and we try to split this different part. So usually, when we have an interactive system, I think maybe some of them know that, but I'm not sure know all of you. So when we have an interactive system, we try to decompose the application in three parts. So we have first the core component, who stores the data, executes the behavior, and process user modification. So it's the part we talked about in the previous part of this class. Then you have the interface component, so the interface that makes the link with the user, so displays the object, registers the action of the object, and all the other actions. And you usually have a component that makes the link between these two other components. So for that, there is several architecture models that can be used for that. So probably you have heard some of them, especially MVC, I guess. So you can decompose what we call a functional. I will not go into detail about all this software architecture, but you have, in the existing model, usually you have two ways. So the functional decomposition. So you decompose your full application in just a three part. So the three part I talk about here. So the core component, the interface component, and the link between the two parts. And you can have a multi-agent architecture model. So which means that for each object, you decompose it in three parts. So each object is composed of for example, in the example of MVC, a model, which is where the data are stored, a view, which is the presentation to the user, and a control that makes the link between a model and view. you can find the same thing on pack, which is another thing where you have the abstraction. It's where the data are, you have the presentation, it's the interface with the user, and you have the control that makes the link between the two components. And of course, you can also here have hybrid architecture models that do both functional decomposition and multi-agent decomposition. So this is the model for interactive system. There is also a bunch of models for collaborative system. So the idea is to distribute data on remote computer. So to implement what we talked about before about data distribution. So the idea is also to manage communication between all these modes. So I will also not go really deep into detail. You have some models that are based on abstraction layer. So you have several layers there. This is this example. And some of these examples are a shared layer between all the users. And some are layers that are specific to a user. So for example, the layer that relate to the device of the user can be specific to the user. But the layer that relate to the core application can be shared between users. Okay, you can also have multi-agents, so I will not go into detail. It's also some, I think we will show an example, it would be maybe easier to understand. The thing is, we see that we have some multiple agent model, and they seem well adapted to virtual environment, because in this case, a virtual object can be what they call agent, and have this particular data distribution for each virtual object. And however, existing model for collaboration system usually doesn't fit this requirement, so I didn't talk about them, so I will not go into detail. And yeah, I will mainly give you this example. So this is an extension of the pack model. So the pack model here is decomposed. Here we have the abstraction. Here we have the control that makes the link between abstraction and presentation. And presentation is the interface with the user. So here you can see that it decomposed with an interface and the real class. It's a object programming here. So that's why you have interface and the real object. And each real object irritates from the interface. But the idea is that you have the abstraction, the control, and the presentation there. So each virtual object can be modeled by this pack agent. And for collaboration, we can just add here some distribution policy, and the control can be the one who is in charge to doing the distribution between several nodes. So each, I say that already, each virtual object is modeled by a pack agent, and the controller, which is in charge of doing the link between the abstraction and the presentation, is also the one who is in charge of managing the network distribution. So he maintains the consistency between all the nodes. So for example, if the user asks here through the presentation to do a modification of an object, he goes through the controller, and which modifies the abstraction. But also the controller will be in charge to transmit this modification on the network. So he can have several distribution policy. So one for each data distribution mode. So here we have this one is the referent one, here is the proxy, and here is the replicated mode. So the idea is just to have this policy here. And it provides a generalized interface to access to the object. So if we want to make two objects communicate together, one object can just call the controller of the other object. And in this way, it's more simple to do. And we can have also multiple presentations for the same object. So I talked about before the visual presentation, the sound presentation, we can have the haptic presentation, and things like that. So So this model, what is good with this model is that it will enable to implement this referent proxy paradigm. So for the referent, we can have the abstraction which stores the data, the controller, and here some presentation. Or even if we are, for example, on the server, we even don't need to have presentation here. We just need to store the data and have the control to manage the communication. So for example, if we receive a modification request here, I can directly transmit it to the abstraction, get the parameter after the abstraction, and maybe update the presentation if I have one presentation. And if I have a proxy, usually just receive an update from the network, and then I can update the proxy. So it's an easy way to implement the referent proxy paradigm, and it enables interoperability between virtual objects. So if I want to modify, for example, an object, I don't have to know if it's a referent or a proxy. I just call the controller, ask for the modification, and the controller will deal either to transmit it to the abstraction or to transmit it to the network. So the idea is really to simplify the development of distributed application. This is what I say. All access to the object are managed by the controller. And it can enable to have dynamic migration of the referent, because if we want to migrate from the proxy to a referent, we just need to create a new abstraction, but we still have the same kind of architecture with the controller here. So I just give you an example here for the hybrid mode. It's the example we saw before. So all the modification requests are always sent to the controller. So if the user here do an action on the presentation, if you remember, it's the interface with the user, the modification is transmitted to the controller, and it's the case in both cases, it's always transmitted to the controller, and then the controller chooses either to process the modification locally and to update the node, or to ask the referent for the modification. So the idea is the controller choose where the request should be processed and manage update of the remote version of the object. So each time the controller updates the proxy. And the idea is if you are using object programming, you just create one object that deals with this data distribution. And then when you create other objects, you just irritate from the object that deal with data distribution, and you don't have to deal with data distribution in all your new objects. Then it starts to be a bit bothering. So you have just to deal once with this data distribution. I say that here. So you have several advantages of this data for data distribution. So first, you have interoperability, because the object communicate together only by the control. So they just access through the control. So even if they are not in the same data distribution mode, you don't care of that. You just send message to the control, and you don't have to care about the data distribution of the object. It's enable easy migration, because you just have to create basically a new abstraction. And what I was saying before, the developer don't have to deal with data distribution. You just have to irritate from one basic component that already do the data distribution. And basically, you don't have to do this data distribution. So maybe you will not implement something as complicated like that in your project, but you can, I think, keep the main idea just by creating a core. I know you can say that a basic object or a core object that do the data distribution, and then irritate from this object to not have to code in each object the data distribution. Because it would be, if we create, I don't know, once you are, let's say you are doing a distributed drawing application, and if you are creating the circle and you deal with the distribution of the circle, synchronization between the two circles in the two applications, and you do a rectangle and you have to redo everything, it would be really painful. So I think you can keep this main idea of do a basic object that deal with the data distribution, and then you irritate from this object and you will not have to each time deal again with the data distribution. And yeah, I think I will just give us some other examples. So the idea of having this decomposition between abstraction, control, and presentation is also good when you have multiple representation. So several presentations of an object on the same node. So it's the case when you have multi-sensorial representation of an object, but it's also good when you have, I don't know, sometimes you want to have a slider on a graphical pie chart, for example, that represents the same value. So you maybe want to have several presentation linked to the same data. So let's say I have a pie chart for the temperature. I have also a slider for the same temperature, and I want to be able to interact with this value either with the pie chart or by the slider. It's good to have this scheme where you can have here the pie chart, here the slider, and both can do the link with the same values. And if I modify one presentation of the object, let's say I modify the temperature by using a pie chart, then it will make the modification of the value and update the slider. Yeah, exactly. And the last, in the case of a distributed application, the good thing is that also you can, so this was on, you can have multiple representation on the same node. So let's say I have the pie chart and the slider on my computer, but we can also have multiple representation on different nodes. So on one node, I will have a pie chart, and on another node, I will have a slider. And it can the same, because you have also, again, the abstraction and the control. On the other, you have the abstraction and the presentation. And you can have different kind of representation. It can be useful also on the case where you have a laptop, for example, on a smartphone on another one, and you don't want that the data look the same on the laptop or on the smartphone. So that's why it's good to have this decomposition between abstraction, control, and presentation. And I think that's it for today. So this data distribution is a common issue between all the CSCW application. So we always have to find a trade-off between consistency and responsiveness. Even in Google Doc or this kind of application, you have to find a trade-off between, is it really consistent between each user, or can they interact in real time? And so the network architecture, and so you have to choose a network architecture on the data distribution. You have also to find a way to manage the consistency between the data. So I think there is no solution which fit all the application requirements. So that's why an adaptive solution might be a good solution. And if your case of your project, you will maybe not develop something really complicated, but you will have really to think what is a good network architecture, what is a good data distribution, how I manage concurrency access, how I manage synchronization. So it's on kind of the technical aspect, but you also will have also to think how you will implement that. So you will have to think about the software architecture. So this software architecture has to deal with the data distribution over the network, and also sometimes with various software library or material device or several representation of the object. And so I think it's important to make a clear separation between the core application part, so the data itself, the way the data are distributed on the network, and the interface with the user, to try avoid to mix up everything, because then it starts to be hard to develop. And I think that's it for today. Do you have any question? No. Okay. But yeah, I think when you are working on your project, you have some question about that, don't hesitate, because it's maybe a bit abstract now, and I think we saw a lot of stuff, so maybe don't don't hesitate to ask questions or to send email if you have any question about data distribution or things like that.
Thank you.